There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed.
I think we got a heck of a shot of winning. We beat anybody in the world, and I think we're going to win next Sunday.
Eli Manning stays on his feet, airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
For all you non-believers, disrespect us, talk crap about the defense like we ain't the third best defense in the league.
See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
Fitzpatrick. End zone. Eric Decker holds it in. The Jets win in overtime.
And the New York Giants, given last rites by many in December, are the Super Bowl champs in February.
This is NFL Friday, going long on all news, reaction, and game picks for the Giants, Jets, and across the NFL on WFUV Sports.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome in to NFL Friday, WFUV Sports' exclusive NFL podcast. And today, a little bit of a sad one. It's the funeral of this season's NFL Friday, but we're still going to have some fun. Some might call it our Super Bowl, our last meeting of the season right now. And before we jump into the Super Bowl, a bunch of different football picks. I'm Evan Harkin, joined alongside Eli Keeler and Will Talent. Eli, Will, how you guys doing on this Super Bowl week?
I'm doing super great. I'm super psyched to be here. Been on for a few weeks in a row. Haven't been, you know, super involved in WVV for a while, so I'm glad to make my little comeback, and hopefully we finish it strong today.
Yeah, doing great. Doing great. Super Bowl was a lot of fun. Game sucked. But other than that, you know, can't complain. This is the last. It might be the actually, we have the draft show. But
yes,
this is the last NFL Friday exclusive podcast of all of our FUV tenures. Kind of sucks, but how it goes.
And Eli, you mentioned that you haven't been super involved, but something you've been super involved in are those NFL Friday picks. You made it from the fifth seed coming into the playoffs, was even lower than that in the regular season. The comeback kid never gave up, made it all the way to that Super Bowl, eventually lost in that Super Bowl. It came down to the Gatorade color in that one all the way down to the end. Perfect Joe Henry ended up pulling that one out. But Eli, take us through it. Take us through the emotions you had in that Super Bowl, maybe throughout the whole playoffs.
That's what I always say, man. Never give up.
Mm-hmm.
Never give up. What can I say, man? I had a lot of hope as the fifth seed. Honestly, I was just riding out. Been riding out all year. I was like 6 or 7 a couple weeks before the playoffs. Snuck into 5, and I just tried to ride that momentum. Each week, you just take it week by week, and we made it all the way. And down to the Gatorade color,
yeah.
How can you not be romantic about football?
It doesn't get better than that. That's what it's all about.
And you mentioned the Gatorade color. I think you said before we got on the air that you had picked purple because the Chiefs had used purple in their previous seasons where they won, and you and Joe Henry kind of figured if the Eagles were going to win that it was going to be lemon-lime. You know, a little bit of controversy whether lemon-lime is a color or not.
Not a color, but
it's a Gatorade flavor. It's a Gatorade flavor, and it was the color of that. So we'll give that one to Joe Henry. But Will, me and you, not as good this year. You in the playoffs as well, so you a little bit better. How was your NFL Friday pick-ems this season?
I made kind of a comeback mid-season. I had like 4 or 5 straight double-digit wins in those weeks, and I moved all the way up to second. I lost in the divisional round. I think it was on a touchdown pick, but you know that's why we built that bracket. It was supposed to be that way, and just didn't fall my way. I played the card I was dealt, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun doing that. We usually do that here at FUV, but not to the extent that we did, where we're tracking it from week one all the way to the Super Bowl. Hopefully, that's something that's carried over to next year. Because that was really fun. It was super interactive, and it gave everyone that was on the show, even if they weren't technically counting picks, it gave everyone on the show something to look at physically throughout the season, which made it so much more fun to follow along for sure.
100%. Me and Eli were talking before we got on the mic saying that we were looking at that and focusing more on our pick'ems than sometimes bets than we had actual money on, just because of we want that
intense
reputation here. It was intense. Yeah. It was competitive. It was really good, but I was not very good at it. I joined Team Tank
about
halfway through. I was doing well.
You know, something went happened along the ways.
You know, something happened. I joined Team Tank. I think it was when the Giants, my favorite team, started to tank. Mm. I was like, I got to hop on board. Yeah.
I need the draft pick
I got to show that I want to tank too. I joined Team McAdams. I think Team Carino was tanking for a little bit there as well. I wasn't alone in the tank off, but definitely something we have to bring in next season. Tons of fun. Need a little bit less tankers next year. You know, you don't get a draft pick, so there's no reason to tank.
No draft pick.
Yeah, we need to stay more locked in.
You get the ultimate bragging rights, though. That was the whole idea, and Joe Henry gets that now.
Of course Joe Henry gets it. That guy just picks everything, right?
Even after a faulty week one. Remember where we started in week one?
Oh, yes.
Had a whole surprise episode. Yeah, like to put him to trial. And he comes away victorious. You know, he was innocent.
Yeah, about
that. You know,
beat the case, beat Eli.
Remember Joe Henry's dad?
I do remember. Oh my gosh, I forgot about Joe Henry's dad.
Well, I don't know about Joe Henry's dad.
Joe Henry's
called in.
Did he?
Joe Henry called him on the phone. This is Lou, by the way.
That's awesome.
He called him on the phone and had him. He was like a character witness. It was great.
A little bit of bias, but
I mean, as funny as Joe is, his dad may be even funnier.
His dad was great.
That makes a lot of sense. We'd expect Mr. Henry to be funny as well. But going into that actual Super Bowl, maybe a little bit away from our NFL Pick'em Super Bowl, and into the Super Bowl 59 matchup that we saw this past Sunday, a crazy game, a game that I don't think a lot of people expected. That one was won by the Philadelphia Eagles by a final score of 40-22. The score was 24-0 going into half. It was never really a football game. Patrick Mahomes' first half stats are his worst first half he's ever played. Vic Fangio went into this game being 8-0 when playing against Patrick Mahomes went into this game being 8-0 when playing Vic Fangio, ends up losing that game. Everything said that this game wasn't supposed to be a blowout, and it was. But I kind of want to get, what were you guys' emotions going through the game? Maybe what were you doing during the game? Maybe at a bar, hanging out with each other? What was watching the game like for you guys?
Us three were watching it all together in their living room.
In the living room.
It was a great time. Great time. It from the jump, it sucked, though.
Yeah.
It was really tough to watch. Up until halftime, I mean, it was, a 24-point game?
Yep.
And the Chiefs just weren't there. They weren't there at all during the game whatsoever. Those 16 points they had in the fourth quarter, I mean, they count statistically.
Yeah.
The Eagles played their entire depth pieces.
Yeah.
You know, and they were able to score 16 points. Great. Those depth pieces that the Eagles have would have beat middling teams in the NFL. That's how good the Eagles are and will continue to be, especially with the amount of cap space that they still have. I was really disappointed, though. Really, really disappointed. Not because the Eagles won. I mean, I was really disappointed about that. But just how non-competitive it was. It was just not a contest at all during this game. The Chiefs were so flat-footed. Patrick Mahomes got sacked 6 times. Patrick Mahomes probably played his worst game ever, too. His final stat line, I mean, at a glance, 21 for 32 with 257 and 3 touchdowns. He also had 2 picks, though. Maybe that doesn't look so bad. He looked awful.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some plays. Now, granted, he wasn't getting any protection. O-line definitely really collapsed on him. But when he did get protection, his footwork was all over the place. He made some really, really abysmal passes just straight into the ground. There were a couple passes to Travis Kelce that, and I only point him out because those are the ones that I really, really looked at, that were just straight into the ground, and they were easy 5, 6, 7 yard receptions that could have been caught. It wasn't even the coverage. The Eagles played really great defense, obviously, but Mahomes was just all over the place, and honestly, it starts with him. It really does start with him. The Chiefs also had no rush game either. Mahomes led them with 25 yards. That's deplorable. That's not going to get anything done. So the Eagles out-depthed them, and that kind of could have been expected going in.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we talked last week about how good this team is on paper, the Eagles. So it doesn't really, like, I'm not super surprised an Eagles win. I had money on an Eagles win. Obviously, like, you don't bet against the Chiefs. You don't bet against Patrick Mahomes, but that narrative's kind of out the window too after this. But to see a blowout like this, I don't think anybody saw this coming. Because even as good as the Eagles are, the Chiefs, Mahomes, historically, makes those 5-yard passes, doesn't make those, at least one of the picks, the Cooper to Gene pick,
oh my God.
It's a horrible pass. Terrible pass.
Yeah. And the fumble, too. He fumbled as well.
Oh, yeah.
That, and a lot of turnovers.
Because he doesn't usually make those mistakes. When have we ever seen Pat Mahomes make mistakes like that, especially in, like, at least so many in one game, especially the biggest game, biggest stage. He just doesn't do that. Now I guess he does. But I don't know. The second pick was, that was a better pick than a bad throw, I think. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a good throw, but that was a great pick.
Great pick, really bad read, though.
It was a bad read. It wasn't, really it wasn't a good read.
Zach Bond was in position to make a play like he did, and he made it. Super athletic play, but Mahomes definitely really bad read on that.
Yeah, still not a good throw for sure. But like speaking of the offensive line, super interesting. Like we talk about this as Giants fans all the time. Mm-hmm. We talk about the offensive line week in and week out because of how bad it's been for so long. We see quarterbacks like Daniel Jones who have bright spots and who are just basically terrible behind a bad offensive line. It's really interesting to see Pat Mahomes, the best quarterback in the NFL, arguably, if not top three, just break down behind a bad offensive line. I think it really was more of a really, really, really good dominant defensive line. I'll give the defense more credit than I'll knock the offense. But it was I didn't think I would ever see him break down like that, ever. And it honestly, like, kind of, this game kind of ruins his legacy.
Yeah, it goes to show how much the offensive line really matters in that game. So many good offensive linemen on the Chiefs. They have statistically a really good offensive line. I think this looked like that Super Bowl where Patrick Mahomes played the Buccaneers and he really was just running side to side the whole time. Everyone said it was the offensive line's fault. But I like the point you made too, Will, that Patrick Mahomes just played bad, even when he had time to throw in that first half. A lot of Chiefs fans speculating on Twitter that he got concussed on an early hit. There was an early hit where he hit his head very hard against the turf. After that, was throwing balls into the ground. It didn't look like Patrick Mahomes at all. So maybe that's a bit of an excuse from Chiefs fans, but maybe a little bit to truth for it as well. But sitting there at halftime, I would usually think, as someone that's watched Patrick Mahomes, I've seen him come back against the Texans 24-0 so early in his career. I think that was his rookie year, second season. There's been so many times Patrick Mahomes is down three scores at halftime, and you look to the person you right or left, you say, this game's not over. Patrick Mahomes is coming back. I was looking at the person right on my left up there in the press box saying to them, I don't think there's no sign of them coming back. There's no hope right now. So just a totally odd game from the Chiefs. Like you guys said, the Eagles dominated. Vic Fangio set them up for that success too. There was a lot of plays I saw on Twitter where Mahomes was – it was a designed rollout where he rolls out right. They love that play. The Eagles knew that it was a designed rollout before the play, had their defensive linemen wall off the right side. So Patrick Mahomes then got scared, couldn't go to the right. It just seemed like the Eagles were a step ahead of the Chiefs the whole game, were inside of their head. But going back to that halftime, I think the halftime performance was something pretty big. Maybe we could talk about it a little bit. I don't know if you guys are Kendrick fans at all, but what'd you think of the halftime show?
I thought it was awesome. I thought it was really, really well done. I know a lot of people have their own opinions on it. There's a lot of negatives, a lot of positives all the way around across the board. But that's what happens when you have a record-shattering performance. You're going to get a lot of different opinions about that performance. He beat Michael Jackson's record by 100,000 viewers. That's just really, really, really cool stuff, man. I think it was 133.5 million viewers, and Michael Jackson had 133.4. So Kendrick Lamar's performance was really cool to watch on TV. It was really well done. I thought the message was great. He touched on a lot of things that I think this country needed to hear outside of football. And a lot of people that disagreed with that personally, they don't want to hear those messages. That was my opinion on it. I thought he did a great job. I thought the surprise of Serena Williams and Samuel L. Jackson was really cool. Samuel L. Jackson's character of Uncle Sam was also really well done. I just, every line that they had teed up for him in terms of a script, I thought it just made a lot of sense. Yeah. It made a lot of sense. It was really well done.
Yeah, I think whenever you get Kendrick Lamar basically doing anything, you get these like insane levels of symbolism. And it came out again. Even watching it, first of all, I was just entertained by, this is just an awesome show. And there were a couple things where I was like, oh, that was pretty cool. I was like, I see the symbolism of that. That was pretty sneaky. I like that. That's very interesting. Then Instagram after, it's like, wow, there are 100 things that I missed that are still really cool. And I think what's so special about Kendrick is very few people, I mean, some people are just going to shut him out for sure.
Yeah.
But what's easy to do with Kendrick is you hear, you see a performance like that, and then it's all over your Instagram feed, layers of like, oh, this is what he meant by this, 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 and this. So you're like getting, you're exposed to it. You're getting all of it. So people who don't want to hear this message kind of have it shoved down their throats in a way, shoved onto their feed. I love that. And I do think like the NFL stage is one that's certainly mixed politically. You have everybody watching football all across the country. So I think it was great to for them to put him in a position where he could really speak to everyone.
I thought, too, that people, complaints that I saw all over, across the board from anyone that was either there or not, specifically to the people that were there, I really don't want to hear anything. I don't want to hear anything at all. You spent that much money to go to that game, and you saw a 15 to 20 minute Kendrick Lamar performance with SZA and Sam L. Jackson and Serena Williams and a bunch of other people there. If you didn't like it in person, I really have no sympathy for you. You were at the freaking Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And you saw a unique performance from one of the best artists of this generation. Yeah. I don't have any sympathy for you whatsoever. You were at the freaking Super Bowl, man.
That was a historical event, too.
Yeah.
Like, not only is this a Super Bowl we'll remember for a long time, that is a halftime show I will remember for the rest of my life.
100%. Yeah. Oh, it was up there with Prince. It was up there with Michael Jackson. It was one of the best, I think, that they've ever had. And on a personal note for Kendrick Lamar, his last album, GNX, 230,000 units sold in this week alone. And then Damn and Mad City, 34,000 units. Those are like 10-year-old albums that are in the top 10 of rap albums for this week alone. I mean, Damn came out when we were in middle school. That's crazy.
Well, like you said, well, I was at the freaking Super Bowl, actually, and it was a lot of fun.
The freaking Super Bowl.
and I think
you didn't complain, though.
I didn't complain about it. No complaints for me. I was posting my little videos of what was going on, letting the people know. And I think some people were misleading the people on Twitter, kind of maybe taking videos. I think maybe you guys have saw it of, like, two rows of people that weren't having fun, and then the narrative was like, this concert is the worst of all time. Look at the crowd. Like, no one's cheering or anything like that. But that wasn't true. I was there. I was videotaping. I have a lot of videos of it. The crowd was very into it. It definitely took a very big step up once he played Not Like Us and TV Off, which I thought was awesome that he played Not Like Us. He previewed the fact that he wasn't going to play it, that he was going to get sued if he played it. And that part was really fun. Everyone was wondering. I heard a bunch of people in the row in front of me thinking, will he play it, speculating that. So that part, I think, was the best when he played Not Like Us. Was really funny. It was kind of a crazy moment as well. Colleen Wolfe then came. I don't think this was on the TV broadcast. It was kind of only in the arena. Colleen Wolfe then came on the Jumbotron and said, everybody sang that A minor part. Good job for singing that. So I thought that was a little bit of a crazy part of that as well. Everybody knew the words to that part. That part was actually really cool because I could hear the fans singing throughout the stadium, even louder than Kendrick singing it, which was a cool moment. But just to go to our point, that it was a very good halftime show, I think, as well, overall. Maybe some false information out there on Twitter, maybe from Drake fans, maybe from some people that don't like the messages that Kendrick Lamar was putting out there as well. But with the end of the Super Bowl comes the end of the NFL season, but then comes the NFL draft, which gets people excited, especially us Giants fans right here. We love the NFL draft. That's our Super Bowl.
Usually pretty early on.
We usually turn it off there. Now that we have the NFL draft coming up, we do have a draft show coming soon, but we can get some takes off as well for sure right here in this NFL Friday segment. So I kind of want to get, as our Giants fans right here, who do you guys think the Giants should draft, and is that different from who they will draft?
It'll be different.
It always is.
I really, really am a fan of, in the should category, Travis Hunter, Jackson Dart. You're getting two for one.
Yeah.
You really are. If you need to trade back into the first round, that's great. You have one of the first picks of the second round to use.
Yeah.
You also have some other picks as insurance as well. If you get Cam Ward, that's a positive. You need to hammer the second and third and fourth round picks, though. I really think if Travis Hunter falls to them and they can get Jackson Dart, that is a slam dunk first round or early second round, whatever it is. I really would like that to happen. If they end up getting Cam Ward, I'm okay with that too. just hit on your picks in the earlier rounds.
Do you think there's a chance they get Shedeur Sanders?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It obviously, and this is extremely obvious, but it's a little bit layered. It depends on what the Titans and the Browns do,
yeah.
obviously, because they're ahead of them.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of questions with both of those teams. Will the Titans stick with Will Levis? Are they a fan of the development and they go for what they've been saying, the best possible player in the draft, which I believe is Travis Hunter?
Yeah.
You won't go with Cam Ward. You'll have a Malik Willis, Will Levis, Cam Ward situation. Like that's way too much going on in terms of quarterbacking. If you are confident in Will Levis, you stick with him and you get the best player available. If they do that, Travis Hunter's off the board. Then you have to see what the Browns are going to do. Are they going to go with the quarterback? They obviously can't use Deshaun Watson next year. I mean, two Achilles tears in the same leg he's not going to play next year. If he does, it'll be very late. I don't think he even touches the field, though. Mm-hmm. Do you take a quarterback and then try to move off of him? I don't think you can do that either. His contract is way too hard. Maybe they go with another Jameis Winston type to start their season, because they're not going to be very good again next year. They're just not. They're going to get rid of Myles Garrett. They've kind of blown it up, unfortunately. Does taking a quarterback benefit them? Maybe. I think you're just kind of in a logjam regardless. So if they take one, I think it's going to be Cam Ward. I think Cam Ward does have the edge over Shedeur. That is the world in which I see the Giants getting Shedeur Sanders. I'd be fine with either of them, but my preference is Hunter and Dart.
I've been thinking about this recently. I'm even at the opinion now that if Abdul Carter's available, you don't go quarterback.
Mm.
Like
I'm so much
in favor now, because we talked about this a lot over the past few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so much in favor of us getting a bridge quarterback, like we talked about, some veteran who can, even Jameis. Jameis looks
a lot of good options.
There's so many options. There's so many options. Just for a year, literally 1 year. Jameis Winston for a year, just get Malik Nabers 1,300 receiving yards, 10 touchdowns, see what's good, and just build up. Abdul Carter's a great piece. Travis Hunter would be an electric piece. So I'm totally in favor of that. Even if you want to trade back, if Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter go 1 and 2, I don't think it's crazy to trade out of that third pick. Don't go quarterback. That's if you sign a bridge guy or a veteran QB you're confident in before the draft. Trade out of that third pick, get a defensive guy or an offensive lineman at like 10 or something, maybe build a little bit of draft capital for the second round or the first round next year. I could totally see that happening. I don't think they'll go that way. I think if they have Cam Ward available, it'd be hard to pass up on him. But it's really hard to tell. There are so many teams who could either draft a quarterback or go bridge, like Titans, Browns, Giants, Jets, Raiders are all teams that could kind of go either way there. And depending on what they do, you could trade up, trade back, depending on people's needs. But honestly, like Jackson Dart, I've been seeing more attention around him. You talked about Jackson Dart a lot.
He can play. He really can.
And I wouldn't hate a Jackson Dart and a defensive, and just like third pick, just go best player available.
I have a question for you on that, though, because I like the Abdul Carter take here. That's a reach, and I like it because it's not a name that's been linked to the Giants like that. What does that do for Kayvon Thibodeau? Do they trade him? Do they try to get more draft capital?
Hopefully it motivates him.
Yeah.
He was third or fifth? He was third, Evan Neal was fifth or mixed match?
I think he was fifth, Neal was seven, something like that.
Oh, fifth and seventh.
Still top ten picks. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he should be playing, like he's not playing poorly,
mm-hmm.
but for a fifth or seventh pick, he should be playing way better. And so to get a guy like Abdul Carter come in and be like, look, bro, if you don't play, he's going to take your job.
Yeah.
Hopefully that motivates him. And then you have two elite edge rushers,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And then Brian Burns. And then if you re-sign Azeez Ojulari, I mean, they could really have a scary defensive line if that does motivate.
Terrifying. With Dexter Lawrence, like, that's like one of the best
100%.
On paper in the league.
100% for sure.
I would love that.
Another thing, too, with my Jackson Dart position, they really need a secondary. Like, they really, really do. That's why I'm really pressing for Travis Hunter. Or even Will Johnson out of Michigan State.
Yeah.
Just Michigan. Or Abdul Carter would be good, too. He's more front four there. But the Giants really, aside from quarterback, they really need help in that secondary.
They totally do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Newbin and Phillips have been great, but they need somebody else there, too.
They definitely need more pieces. But one thing I'll say is, like, if you just pound that defensive line, give the quarterback less time, your secondary looks blitz heavy. So much better.
Yeah.
And so you could, I would totally would be cool with secondary piece, Travis Hunter, Will Johnson. There are probably some other names that are good that I'm not aware of. But I think starting with the D-line is, like, secondary guys come in and out of New York all the time, in my mind, especially safeties. They just come and go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we keep getting good safeties. Like, we're pretty good at drafting safeties, I'll say. But defensive backs is a position that's always been, that's recently, like, last 5-7 years has been shaky for us for sure. So unless it's Travis Hunter, I think I would give Abdul Carter the edge just because I think his ability as a pass rusher will actually do more for our secondary than, like, a mid to late first round cornerback.
You know? I like that a lot. I haven't really heard that at all. That's a good take.
And the only time the Giants have won in history is when they have very good edge rushers, whether it's Lawrence Taylor, whether it's Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck. The Giants' 4 Super Bowls have came off of their defensive line being the best in the league, beating opposing quarterbacks that are better than their quarterback because they're just getting back there quicker. So I like that take as well. I also love the point you made, Eli, about how many teams in this draft we're unsure are going to go get a bridge quarterback or are going to draft a quarterback. This might be one of the most unpredictable drafts, I think, of all time right now. You started listing off names and it made me think, he's right, there's so many teams that maybe in a week we get a report that they picked up Matt Stafford, that they picked up Jameis Winston.
Oh, Matt Stafford.
And now we have to think, oh, they're going to get a different player. It wasn't a quarterback. So much is going to happen going up into the draft. But for my Giants take, I think this is where the will and should comes in for me. I agree with both of you. I'd love Abdul Carter. I'd love Travis Hunter. I don't think either of those quarterbacks are the guy. But I think that the Giants will get Shedeur Sanders. And I think that because I think Shedeur won't and Deion won't allow him to go to the Browns or the Titans. We see that a lot with these famous NFL legacy families, the Mannings being one of them. Deion has already said in Travis's like sophomore year of college, he's only going to these 5 teams, 6 teams. The Giants were one of those teams that he's named. The other ones weren't in that list. He actually said that he won't let him go to some of those teams. I think he said he won't let him go to the Titans. So I think Shedeur Sanders will be sitting there. And I think that Joe Shane is going to be scared to go another season without picking that quarterback. Now, he did it last year. It got the criticism. You could have picked Drake May. You could have picked Jaden Daniels. You could have got Caleb Williams. And they all would have made this team maybe better than it is with Malik Nabers on it. Has gotten that criticism in the past that we've given you all this time to get it right and get a quarterback. Instead, you picked Daniel Jones, let him rock, and picked nobody else. And this is what happened. I think they're feeling that pressure. I think they know or feel that they have to go get a quarterback. They at least have to get that guy and try it out, give fans hope for this season a little bit higher than they have right now. But I think going to the other side of MetLife, the Jets are picking 7th overall, so they're pretty far up there as well. They've got some problems as well. Aaron Rodgers, there's been a report this week that he was told by the Jets that they won't be proceeding with him into the 2025 season. So the Jets looking for a quarterback. Now the Jets have Jackson Dart in their talks as well in that second round. So Jackson Dart, I feel like he's going to be one of those QBs that goes into the first round.
I think he will.
With JJ McCarthy.
I really think he's going to be a first round pick. Yeah. Look at Jaden Daniels last year. Jaden Daniels, to start immediately after winning a Heisman, was a late round one, early second round guy. And went 2nd overall. Yeah. There were a lot of mock drafts that had him going to the Seahawks at like 24, 25, and he goes 2. Jackson Dart has that kind of potential. He's played really well at the Senior Bowl from what I've heard, or he had. I don't even know if it's still going on. It's probably not. But he played really well. Him and Dylan Gabriel played really well among all the quarterbacks that were there. Jackson Dart's stock, though, continues to rise. I don't think it'll be a Jaden Daniels type rise, but he could go like middle second round and maybe even as high as 10. That I could really see that happening.
I could see Jackson Dart going in the first round. I think we were talking this exact way about JJ McCarthy last year, for example. Michael Penix, who got drafted in the top 15 to be Kirk Cousins' backup quarterback to start the season. Teams value quarterbacks so much more than I think Mel Kiper and these draft analysts are thinking going into the season. I think Jackson Dart could go to the Jets as early as round 1, pick 7. I don't think that's crazy. I think the Jets need a quarterback and will be okay with drafting one a little bit too early. But I think that the Jets, I think they will go defensive line at pick 7. I think that they need defensive linemen. They got rid of a lot of their young pieces to bring in Hassan Reddick, who we know is a complete failure. They pretty much threw away all the depth they had in that young defensive line spot. So I think they go get Mason Graham from Michigan. I know seven's a spot where maybe we don't know too many names that they'll pick there. So maybe if there's position groups you guys think the Jets have to get as well. But who do you guys think the Jets get at seven, or what position?
I don't think quarterback's a bad option at all. Like, they really do need a quarterback. Yeah. And they have weapons to put a quarterback in a pretty good position. Only thing is, like, so this is one of the things is I think there's gonna be so much movement. You have as we talked about, Raiders, Jets, Giants, Titans, Browns.
Mm-hmm.
That's five teams inside of the top 10 who all need quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Then you have like Steelers. Then there are teams like the Rams and the Jaguars, who there have been rumors that Trevor Lawrence might be on the move. Steelers apparently inquired about that. Matt Stafford looks like he could be on the move for sure. There are teams that could. There's gonna be so much movement. Jets could even trade down if they're confident in a Jackson Dart at like 20.
Yeah.
That could be a elite draft from the Jets. I don't think it hurts no matter what you do with the Jets, honestly, because the only thing is this is another team. They could get a bridge quarterback, keep the receivers happy, and then go defense.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna see that decision making. It's gonna be really interesting to see GMs for like seven teams have to make that choice of, are we gonna get a quarterback for a couple years who we know is all right, or are we gonna draft QB? I think I could totally see Shadur. Well, Raiders at six. I don't know if Shadur will keep going, but maybe if Cam Ward or Shadur falls to seven, they could go there. Jackson Dart can move his way up. I honestly, as the Jets, you need a lot of positions. I don't think you could really hurt yourself too bad anyway.
The Jets, to me, need to go either line, personally. I think they're at a stage where you want to keep Garrett Wilson happy, so you want to get him the ball. You don't want him to be an aid to another project. We know how drafted quarterbacks have gone for the Jets for the last 15 years, and it hasn't gone well whatsoever. Everyone seems to be excelling as soon as they leave the Jets. Geno Smith, Sam Darnold. The only one probably not is Zach Wilson. He may not even be on a team next year, but right now, if you are looking to draft a quarterback, this is where a lot of teams fail miserably. The Giants are one of them. You should not, unless he is your guy, like 100%, you should not be drafting a quarterback if you cannot contain him. If your offensive line is just going to crumble, this quarterback is never going to succeed. Mm-hmm. If you look at all the quarterbacks that have been drafted recently, yes, a lot of them are good. You look at Allen, you look at Jackson, you look at all these guys that are great quarterbacks. They all had solid to good offensive lines, or they were on their way up. The Jets have a solid offensive line. I won't go any further than solid. It may even be, you know, a reach. So if you're the Jets, before you get a quarterback, you need to solidify that he's going to be protected. If you're not going to do that, then you should go with Mason Graham. I'm a fan of Mason Graham. There is a chance that they don't bring back Javon Kinlaw.
Mm-hmm.
So Mason Graham could fit right in there. I think if you are the Jets, you go with one of the two lines and you'll be okay. And like you were saying, Eli, the bridge quarterback concept this year, it's probably the most that we've seen in a very long time. And not only are there a lot of teams that need one, there are a lot of bridge quarterback free agents. There's no elite guys like that. They're all kind of bridge options. So it's going to be a whirlwind. It's going to be really fun. Someone's going to settle for a rookie. Someone's going to settle for a bridge guy. You know, with the Giants, they could end up getting Matt Stafford and then not even going for a quarterback at all,
electric,
and they wait another year. They just signed his brother-in-law to be a quarterback's coach, wide receiver's coach.
Odd sign.
There's been a lot of traction there. And Malik Nabers had been tweeting about Matt Stafford, maybe Jermaine Illuminor, I was as well. There was another Giants player that was, so I don't think it was Kayvon. But the Giants have a lot of options. The Jets also have some flexibility, too. They can space the cap hit for Aaron Rodgers out for the next two seasons, which will definitely help them. But in conclusion, offensive line, defensive line, I think is the way to go if you're the Jets. If you decide to stay in seven, trading down wouldn't be a bad option.
You could even trade up and like stay at seven, but then get another first-round pick and go defense, Jackson Dart, or O-line, Jackson Dart, even offensive line, defensive line. You could do a lot of damage during this draft. Is there a ton of good defensive players in this draft?
Yeah, there are a lot.
You could do some work.
And Will, to your point, that a lot of bridge quarterbacks out there looking to find teams, I think the Jameis Winston looking for a job thing is hilarious. Personally, he holds up signs as if he's a homeless guy in the mall saying, someone give me a job. Someone sign me. He asked Saquon Barkley in a press conference if he knows any teams looking for a job. So I think that part's hilarious. But goes to show what Will's talking about this year and so many bridge quarterbacks just sitting around out there. I also love the point you made, Will, about if the Jets get Jackson Dart, now that's another project. That makes a lot of players on the team upset, a lot of young players. I'm sure Garrett Wilson would be very upset if the Jets went and drafted Jackson Dart. Now, I think that hops right into what maybe the Jets should do for this offseason, which is what I wanted to talk about right now, get into the offseason talks, even away from the draft, into guys you need to sign, maybe guys you don't want to make upset like Garrett Wilson. There's a lot of young players on the Jets that either have to get signed this year, next year, or the year after. And those three players are Garrett Wilson, Sauce Gardner, and Breece Hall. And those three, a lot of Jets analysts, a lot of reporters say they're going to have to leave one of those guys out. They won't have enough money, especially once they have a quarterback that they'll be paying quarterback money again. They won't be able to sign those three. And I think it's really between Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson. Breece Hall's a running back. We know how they treat running backs in the NFL. I don't think the Jets would even bat an eye if it meant leaving Breece Hall to the side to keep both of them. But I kind of want to get you guys' this take, and this is a big question on Jets Twitter. Do the Jets get Sauce Gardner and lock him up for his career, or do they go the other side and get Garrett Wilson, lock him up for his career? As we know, they have Devontae Adams right now on that receiving core. He's a little bit older. They also have Elijah Moore, a very good cornerback, next to Sauce Gardner. So what do you guys think they do in that situation where they got to pick one?
I think defense wins championships. I think you lock Sauce up. You have DJ Reed.
DJ Reed. I said DJ Moore, yes.
DJ Reed on the defense, too. Dude, if you lock up one and two elite cornerbacks like that, there's really... It's so rare.
Yeah.
It's so rare. I hate to say it, but really good receivers and running backs come and go.
Mm-hmm.
And you could replace Garrett Wilson way easier than Sauce, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I don't think you can replace Sauce at all. I think you can. You're definitely right with that, Eli. I think that if you're going to keep an offensive piece, it's going to be Garrett Wilson.
Yeah.
You can't replace wide receiver ones like Garrett Wilson.
Yeah.
That you could try, but the way that he's played in New York, that's going to be very difficult. Running backs, unfortunately, that's just the story. You can get someone in the third round and they'd be really good in your system.
Yeah.
And then Breece Hall's on another team. That's just how it goes with running backs. If you have good protection and a very solid running back, that solid running back can become a really good running back, even if they're not as talented as some of the more athletic and just like the Saquon Barkleys of the league. You can get a third-round pick and that running back be just as good or maybe slightly worse, and you'll be just fine. A Garrett Wilson, though, You need a wide receiver one. You have to do it. It's very similar to the Giants. You have to do what you can to keep that number one wide receiver happy. You need Malik Nabers there. You need Garrett Wilson there. Because whoever you bring in as a quarterback, that's a weapon. That's a weapon that you can't replace. They need that to succeed, whoever it's going to be that comes in at quarterback. But I do agree with Eli, though. If it's going to be one side of the ball, it's got to be defense. Keep that defense the way it is. That defense is solid. Add to that defense. Add to that defense. Work with the offense. You can do what you can. The priority on offense is keeping Garrett Wilson happy and keeping him in green. Other than that, Breece Hall, you never know. But running backs, you can get a running back in the third, fourth round, and you'll be just fine.
I think a lot of people think like Saquon leaving the Giants, going to the Eagles, and having one of the best running back seasons we've ever seen changes the market. I don't think it does at all. You have a very unique situation where the best running back in the league gets signed behind the best offensive line and goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. The thing is most teams who are going to pay running backs that kind of money don't have an O-line like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he could definitely be good for you. Obviously, Saquon Barkley, he could be a great running back, but if you have a mid-tier offensive line, he might not be a heck of a lot better than he was on the Giants, and he's going to get hit a lot more. And that's just the unfortunate situation with running backs, is you get hit all the time, you get banged up, and unless you are behind one of the best offensive lines we've ever seen. I don't think you just you go and pay a running back a ton of money. So Breece Hall is the first guy out of there for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the Jets just go with Braylon Allen, the younger running back. He's on the rookie contract.
He's showed a lot of promise.
Yeah, with running backs, it's pretty much once you're done with that rookie contract, it gets pretty tough. Guys are just going to look for people with a rookie contract. You made a point about the Giants. Tyrone Tracy isn't Saquon Barkley, but he was a pretty good running back this season behind a bad offensive line in the Giants. There are very few running backs that are good enough to get multiple contracts that way. I think Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley. The list kind of stops there. There's a big gap once you leave those three guys. But to you guys' point over who the Jets should take, I would typically go with the same philosophy you said where defense wins championships. You know, the Jets, when they had Darrell Revis, just continuing, you know, that legacy of really good cornerbacks locking up other teams' pass game. I just think Garrett Wilson is a different animal. I think Garrett Wilson is nearly as good as people think Malik Nabers is going to be, maybe better. I think Garrett Wilson has been disrespected by the quarterbacks he's been given. You think Mike White, you think Zach Wilson. Garrett Wilson had 1,000-yard receiving seasons with those quarterbacks. You think Aaron Rodgers on a Jets team that was completely dysfunctional. Oh, and Davante Adams, who was getting twice the amount of targets once he got to the Jets. Garrett Wilson was top 10 in the league in targets, receptions. He had insane stats all season long. I think he's so good and is such a game changer. He just hasn't had the quarterback to be able to show that yet. But I think Garrett Wilson's a top 5 receiver. Sauce Gardner coming off a bit of an odd down year where he was like a bad tackler. He had tackling issues. DJ Reed was statistically better than Sauce this year, which I thought was a little odd. I agree with the philosophy that defense wins championships. I just think Garrett Wilson is different, and we haven't gotten to see how different he can be yet. But we got to wait to see what the Jets are going to do. It's going to be interesting to see about that. Going over to the other side of the Meadowlands, the Giants have a lot of stuff to do besides the draft as well this offseason, a lot of positions to fill. I personally think it starts with where the Giants have been trying to fix for 10 seasons, the offensive line. Sure. Can't seem to get it right. Like you said earlier, Will, the secondary is very bad as well. If there are any names out there you guys know of in free agency that the Giants should be targeting, are targeting, will be targeting, or just position groups in general, what should the Giants do this offseason?
I love the Matt Stafford idea.
Yeah,
I love it. I think that's the perfect guy. It would make us competitive immediately, give Nabers a lot of balls, and also, like, he's not, I mean, he's getting older.
Yeah.
You know, like, he could be a great leader. Like, if you want to draft a QB next year, even a Jackson Dart, great guy to get in the league behind. You're playing behind Matt Stafford for a year or two. I'm sure you could learn a lot. Matt Stafford's out. Our young, developed, awesome QB slides right in to a good team that hopefully has good O-line and D-line and secondary pieces that we've been drafting while Matt Stafford is our quarterback. But I would never, ever, ever, ever say no to Giants signing or drafting or signing O-linemen. We went crazy last year. I think we signed like 5 O-linemen or something like that. Maybe that was 2 years ago. I'd love to see a similar offseason to that, but also there's only so much money. So I could even see a Giants trade back into an O-line spot if you don't have a guy you like. Like, I was talking about this before. If there's not a Travis Hunter or a Abdul Carter at 3, I wouldn't hate a trade back if you have your bridge QB kind of guy, draft O-line or D-line. So that's my general philosophy.
You can go and get Trey Smith. I'm usually kind of skeptical of O-line free agent signings, particularly with the Giants, because they don't usually work out all that well, to be honest. Some have, some haven't. I'm seeing this pretty solid article from Yahoo Sports on what the Giants could do. Some things I really don't agree with. One of those things is trading Andrew Thomas. Don't like that. Got to keep him. They're talking about having more flexibility with the cap. That makes sense. Trading your best offensive lineman doesn't make sense. He does get hurt a lot. But when he is healthy, and maybe we get that out of him, this Giants offensive line is really not that bad. I mean, Daniel Jones was protected for a good portion in the beginning of the season, and then Andrew Thomas got hurt, and everything went to hell in a handbasket for the Giants. Once he went down, the offensive line was a revolving door. Outside of that first game against the Vikings, this offensive line was pretty solid. So you can beef it up, and that would help. I think if you're the Giants, one thing you can look at to the cap, you could try to restructure Dexter Lawrence and Brian Burns' contracts to help with cap flexibility. That would be pretty sick. I think both of them need to stay Giants. Dexter Lawrence should be a Giant for life. He just should. If Brian Burns isn't, that's okay. You would hope that they win with him because he's the kind of piece that you want to win with now. They're not really at that window just yet. Dexter Lawrence should be a Giant for life. They need guys that are going to be Giants for life. They haven't had one since Eli. They need to keep them. This is so minute to all of the issues that the Giants have. Offensive line, secondary, they need to be addressed either in the draft or free agency. Didn't think about this until I read this article. Get a kicker. Draft a kicker.
Yeah.
And that seems so small compared to a lot of these other issues. The Giants' kicking situation in the last 2-3 years has been awful. Mm-hmm. Graham Gano has been nothing but injured. And then they don't roster enough kickers. They rely on Jamie Gillen, who's a solid punter, and you're trying to get him to kick. Believe it or not, it's a very different kicking style, and it's a very different strength. Jamie Gillen could probably bang home a 35-yarder if they needed him to. It's not what he does, though. He's a great punter. You need to have a kicker that's going to be reliable. Graham Gano is older now. He's getting a lot older. He's been hurt. That's the reason they lost to Washington, because they didn't have a kicker. And that pretty much was the end of the season for the Giants. They beat the Browns. They could have beat the Commanders. They didn't have a kicker. There's other instances in which they could have had a kicker, and they did nothing with it. So if you hammer home a very smaller portion of the game compared to what we're talking about, things could be a lot easier for you. Obviously, the goal is to score touchdowns, but you need someone who could put three up. Yeah. And it's been kind of crazy. I mean, they threw Mason Crosby out there. Didn't think he'd ever be a Giant.
Nope.
And there's a lot of other names. What was his name? Greg Joseph. Mm. Greg Joseph was a Giant. You know, so get someone that's going to be nails for you. You don't need to worry about that position as well. You can draft him. You can take him in like the 5th, 6th round, whatever. Yeah. Get somebody young. Giants have a lot of issues, though. Kicker, offensive line, secondary. Three extreme needs if you don't get a quarterback.
There's a reason these kickers aren't on teams, and we can just assume.
Let's try them out.
Who knows? Maybe they'll yeah. So I think drafting kickers is a great idea. I didn't even think about that.
Get one.
Just in the 5th or 6th round, just pick up the best college kicker. Like, it's just that easy, or the second best. That's money. The thing about, we talked about, like, restructuring cap, it's so tough because if you think about players on the Giants and you're Joe Shane, and from a person-to-person standpoint, just say, I want to give this guy all his money. This guy plays so well for us. I want to give him his contract because he deserves it. That's Dexter Lawrence. Like, yeah. I don't want to restructure his contract if he's going to take that personally at all.
That's fair.
That's like the worst thing I could imagine. He could be chill with it. He could be like, look, Joe, we got to get a better team. Pay me a little bit later. I'm going to be here the whole time. Just get me my money eventually. I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
Could be that kind of situation. If I'm Joe Shane, I have to be very delicate about this, because the worst possible thing could be going in and being like, look, Dex, we want to pay you next year, not this year. And then he's like, dude, I'm your best defensive player. Pay me my freaking money. And then all of a sudden, your best defensive player, Giant for life, you have tension with him and is on the outs. That is the only, I feel like that's the only way I could see Dex ever leaving the Giants, is if there's some kind of team conflict or conflict with the GM. Seems like a chill guy. Doesn't seem like there's really ever been team conflict. Joe Shane could ruin this franchise by doing that. And it's, like, pretty dramatic. Like, these are grown men. Like, they're not going to freak out like that, probably. You never know. But, like, my point is, you don't want to disrespect your best players. Conversation that
I already did it once.
Yes.
Even
like past GMs have done it. You know, that's been a thing the Giants have seen. So you don't want to disrespect your players. I'm more keen to talking to Brian Burns about that, just because he's not Dexter Lawrence. No disrespect to Brian Burns, great player, but Dexy's a guy you can't
He also has a monster contract, too. They gave him a lot of money last year. It's something you could probably rework. You could rework Andrew Thomas's contract.
Yeah.
That's a little bit more flexible.
That's more flexible.
Like, Andrew, you're awesome. Need you to be on the field more, though. Yeah. If you could take this hit, you'll still get your money like the all-pro left tackle that you are. But if you're not, if you're going to play seven games, you know, let's space this out a little bit for sure. They're definitely going to have to do some restructuring because there's guys that need to stay. Andrew Thomas, Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, they all need to stay, but you need to get guys around them too.
Yeah. The thing, like Andrew Thomas, you just said, is you have a reason to have that conversation with Andrew
Absolutely.
Thomas. You do not have any inkling of a reason to have that conversation with Dexter Lawrence except the fact that you need money. So I think Dexy's one of the last guys you go to and say, let's restructure. Just because you made that mistake with money with Saquon, like, just stop. Pay your best guys what they need unless you have a reason to restructure.
Yeah, I love the Giants for life notion that you guys are making right now. You mentioned Saquon Barkley. Going back to those guys, you have to keep your star players happy or else they're going to be upset. They're going to be in those talks for the rest of their career, really. Andrew Thomas, a way you could kind of maneuver that contract to make sure he's playing to get that money is maybe make it more incentive-based, less bonus, less signing. You know, you have to actually be playing if you want this money that you're entitled to and that you really deserve. But to wrap up that 2024 NFL season, which is the offseason we were just talking about going into, I kind of want to get some of our favorite plays, moments, maybe games, wrap it up, put a bow on this NFL 2024 season here on NFL Friday. When I think of my favorite moments, I think early on I really enjoyed, as a Giants fan, not a big fan of the Eagles, Kirk Cousins and the Falcons coming back, Drake London scoring that game-winning touchdown when they had 30 seconds left, end up winning that game. There's a lot of other really cool game-ending moments. Jaden Daniels' Hail Mary toss at the end of the game. You know, a lot of Commanders fans loved that moment as well. And I think of the Vikings and their celebrations in the end zone. I think that was a really cool part of the 2024 season. But what were some of you guys' favorite parts?
My favorite moment was that Hail Mary in the season. That was easily my favorite moment because it was by chance. It was a tip, and they caught it, and it propelled the Commanders to get to the conference championship. That play right there really, really moved them forward. Their schedule ended up getting a little bit harder and they lost some more games. But then they, down the stretch, they beat the Eagles and then they made it all the way to the NFC conference championship. I mean, I love Jaden Daniels in college and it sucks that he's in the same division as the Giants and the Giants had a chance to get him. But, you know, to Jaden Daniels, he's elite. He's very fun to watch. That was an incredible pass. Incredible fortune too. That was just really, really cool to see. I will say too, this isn't a moment, but actually it is a moment tied into a season. The spin into the backwards hurdle.
That was
awesome. Yeah, that was so awesome. And on top of that, Saquon Barkley had one of the best seasons by a running back ever, and he deserves that. Those are my two favorite moments.
That's a great one. Every few years in whatever sport you're watching, like you see like a Kyrie type of guy or a Saquon type of guy, just you do something with the ball that I've never seen in my whole life.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments that I'll be telling my kids about that. Like, child, you do not understand how good Saquon Barkley was.
And he played for the Giants.
Yeah, he did.
That wasn't with the Giants.
They let him go.
Could have been a Giant for life. Yeah, so that's definitely a good one. This is like kind of a random one, but I had Anthony Richardson on my fantasy team, and I'm just generally a little bit of a fan of his. One of these passes, like I forget if it was week one, week two, back foot, just straight up 60-yard dot Josh Downs in the end zone.
Ooh.
One of the best throws I've ever seen, and obviously didn't work out for Anthony Richardson this season. Him and Joe Flacco were just in and out basically every other week. But that was a darn good throw. And my last one, which is controversial as a Giants fan, as it was an Eagles play in the Super Bowl, but that Cooper DeGene pick was electric.
That's an all-timer.
That's an electric pick.
Did you see his comments after, too? I forget. I think it was Scott Van Pelt that asked him, like, what are you thinking when you touch the ball?
Oh, yeah.
He said, were you thinking that you were going to score? And if you were, when did that kick in? And he said, as soon as I touched the ball. It was epic.
Dog.
It was so
dog. Epic. So cool. What I will say about the Eagles, as much as like I hate the Eagles franchise, I love so many Eagles players right now. Yeah. It's hard.
It's tough.
Like, they have such a good, fun team. They're all dogs.
Paris Campbell. Paris
yes. Campbell. There you go.
It's a great one. But even like Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown.
Nick Gates.
Nick Gates.
I do like Nick Gates. He was unironically.
Yeah, it sucks.
He was a good center. He was a solid center.
He had that dog in him.
He did.
Yeah. And it sucks that these are former Giants and Saquon to top it off. So, but yeah, like, Jalen Hurts is a dog.
Yeah.
Like, attitude, just like killer mentality. I saw the clip of like Saquon going up to Hurts at practice and being like, "Yo, you fearless?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he expanded on that, but like it was just like immediately was like, "Yeah, I'm fearless for sure." I was like, "Wow, okay, beast."
Well, some great plays from a great season, and we'd love to chat NFL all day long. This is a sad yet happy conclusion to the NFL season because it is the funeral of the 2024 NFL Friday season here, but it's the funeral of a fun, historic, some would say legendary NFL Friday season here from us at WFUV Sports. So from Lou Orlando on the board, Will Talent and Eli Keeler here next to me in the studio, I'm Evan Harkin saying so long to this season of NFL Friday from WFUV Sports.